I'm speaking with Abdullah Al-Malki. Abdullah Al-Malki has been fighting for justice for many years. He was opportunistically renditioned to torture in Syria, and he has been fighting since his release for justice and for answers of the Canadian government. Abdullah, welcome to No One's Legal Radio.
Hi, thank you.
Abdullah, reading about your case is harrowing. Most Canadians are now familiar with the case of Meher Arar, and of course, what happened to Meher Arar is similar, if not worse, than what happened to you. You were tortured in a Syrian jail for more than a year. You were detained without any cause. But I guess what's worse, if that's possible, is that this seemed to be done at the behest of the Canadian government and Canadian security agencies. And of course, that doesn't make the Canadian government and Canadian security agencies indirectly involved with torture. That makes them completely complicit in torture. So I'm wondering if you can explain to our listeners exactly how the Canadian government and Canadian security agencies were involved in your ill treatment, in your degradation in torture chambers in Syria.
To start off and put things in context, I'll go in a very, very quickly, and in a few minutes over a number of pieces of facts that we have now. And I will start off by the time before leaving Canada. I've been under investigation by CSIS of at least since 1998. Now, as time progressed, and especially after 9/11, things got really terrible. The harassment by the security agencies became unbearable for myself and my family. And I'm talking here harassment, including installing camera across our house, having a number of cars following me anywhere I go, and I had, five, six cars following me all the time. My wife had about two cars. People would follow us any place we go to, be it a bank, be it a grocery shop, and my wife, at that time, she was even outraged even more, and until now, we cannot understand why they even followed her into the kids' section in the public library, a place where she often goes to, and we still wonder what they were expecting her and my kids, who they were, the oldest was 6 years old, were going to find in that kids' section in the public library. Things got really terrible, and we felt that we were squeezed out of the country. We were forced to leave the country. So we decided to take a break and visit my in-laws in Malaysia. Now, things in Malaysia didn't stop. I was stopped for a few hours in Malaysia, and I was asked questions. And when I protested the treatment and being stopped, singled out, and being interrogated, they told me, well, don't blame us. It's the government whom you are holding its passport asked us to do this. So it was clear that the Canadian government was behind even Malaysia, that the information were sent to Malaysia, and I was being questioned in Malaysia based on that information. Now, later on in May 2002, I was going visiting Syria, and I wanted to see my grandmother, whom I had not seen for many, many, many years, maybe more than 10 years, and she was really sick and ill. And I was on a business trip in that region. I took that trip to Damascus, and I was stopped immediately at the airport. Now, the first signal that I, the first indication I had that Canadian government or Canadian agencies were behind what was happening in Syria, when I overheard the officers saying that the report that they stopped me based on, that why they stopped me was based on something they received from an embassy in April 2002. And once I heard the word embassy and connecting everything that was happening in my life before, it was clear the Kenyan government had something to do with it. First day I was almost in a few hours. I was transferred from one place to another, and in a few hours torture started, it was a Friday night, and the torture did not end till the next morning, which was Saturday morning.
We're talking what year now, Abdullah?
2002.
Okay, this is July of
2002.
May 2002, okay.
Yeah, I think, I guess we'll go to torture after, but you asked me the question about Canadian complicity, and maybe I'll give you the what we know of Canadian complicity now.
Okay.
So all the questions I was asked in Syria were questions related to Canada. I was never asked a question related to Syria itself. I was always asked about my business, my life, my people I know, Muslims I knew, Arabs I knew, and companies I dealt with in Canada and the States. What we know now, something that was very interesting as well, that many of the questions that I was asked in June, that is about a month after my imprisonment in Syria, a report came in or questions came in, and all the questions almost that I was asked, they were very similar to the questions that CSIS asked me before, about a year before here in Canada. And it was very striking for me because, you know, the questions are the same. I am the same person who's answering these questions. If they were hoping that they would get a different answer, the only difference is that the person who's asking the questions, he was asking it with a whip in his hand, not a pen. So it was clear that they were hoping to get different answers by having someone under torture asking me the questions. After about 2 months, or less even, after about, I think, 45 days of initial detention, the Syrians found out that there was absolutely nothing against me, and they decided to release me. The treatment got better, and they started preparing the documents for release. But then all of a sudden, the treatment changed. Things got shifted. And instead of being released, I was put through several days of intense torture sessions. And they kept on saying that had it not been for a new report they received, I would have been released. Now, after, you know, that was July 2002. And after 3 years, I got to know that actually RCMP officer was in Syria, went to Syria. And after 4 years from that time, just 2 years ago, we actually found out that when the Syrians decided to release me, I guess the RCMP got in high gear and they sent their liaison officer to Syria and met with the head of Syrian military intelligence. And he was there to broker a deal with the head of Syrian military intelligence. Now, we don't know what that deal was, but what we know is that he thought after that discussion that I'll never come back to Canada, and the Syrians put me through another round of torture there, and they told me I'll never be released. So it looks like that he got some kind of deal which ensured that I will not come back to Canada, which is a huge complicity. I mean, you mentioned in the beginning the similarities or differences between my case and Mr. Arar's case. In this case, the Canadian complicity is direct with the Syrians, and the question is not complicity, if it's conspiracy, you know. While with Mr. Arar, the complicity was with the Americans and that they didn't work enough to release him when he was in Syria. In here, it's different. Now, the ambassador as well and the embassy, the Canadian embassy in Syria, was part of all this. They were the ones facilitating the meetings for the RCMP and later as well for CSIS. After July 2002, a few months after that, CSIS went and, with the approval, by the way, of the Foreign Affairs Minister here in Canada, they went and met with the with my torturers, with my jailers, but we don't know what they discussed. What I knew at the time is that, you know, they start interrogating me for a few days, more than a few days, a few weeks after that, and they kept on threatening me with torture. They apply psychological torture all the time. And at one time, I read the title of the document that they were interrogating me based on, and it said meeting with Canadian delegation on November 24th. Now, we know now for a fact that CSIS, during that time, was meeting with the Syrian military intelligence. So this is, as well, a very clear direct complicity. Even more than this, the RCMP got a clear, they asked for advice, and they got clearly clear statements that if they send questions to Syria for the Syrians to interrogate me by proxy on, I'll be tortured. That there was a very high risk of torture. One of the people who advised the RCMP that I might be tortured was the Canadian ambassador to Syria, yet he is the same person who facilitated later for the RCMP to send their questions and hand them over to the Syrian military intelligence where I was being held so that they would ask me these questions. So clearly, if this was not interrogation by proxy and imprisonment, illegal imprisonment by proxy, and torture by proxy, then what is interrogation by proxy? They clearly knew that there would be a very high probability that I would be tortured, yet they ignored it. The question I have now is that it's not that if they knew that I would be tortured or not, the evidence shows that they were advised that I might be tortured. But I have a question is that, was it that they didn't care or was it that they wanted me to be interrogated under torture? Because we have a statement by CSIS and by the director of CSIS and memos from CSIS from October 2002 clearly state, and they knew that, there was a practice of having people interrogated in certain countries so that they would be interrogated in methods which would be not available or is illegal in Western countries. So clearly they knew what was happening, and I have really now, and I think all the whole Canadian public as Canadian citizens, we need to have that answer that was the whole purpose of me being interrogated by the Syrians with questions that were coming from Canada, the whole purpose being interrogated by proxy under torture and illegally imprisoned in Syria. So that was something that we knew for a fact now. It's the evidence, from O'Connor Commission. We know that questions were sent. We know even the details of who took the questions and who sent them. And the striking thing is that even the ambassador, who's supposed to look after us, Canadian citizens, if we are abroad and in trouble, he was someone who was supposed to ask for either my release or being charged and that I would go to a court and have a fair trial. Now, the fact that I was never charged by that time in Syria, I think his duty should have been to demand my release, but he never did this. He was the evidence suggests and the documents we have suggest that actually in certain documents are clear that the RCMP wanted to further their investigation in Canada of me by sending information to the Syrians. Another document says they wanted to assist the Syrians. So, what do they want to assist the Syrians in except that with my interrogation under torture? How do they want to further the investigation of the Syrians if it wasn't investigation by proxy? Now, during that time, I spent 22 months in jail. About 500 days from that 22 months, I spent them underground, most of them in a grave-like cell that measures less than a public washroom, about an arm length in width, about just a little bit higher than a human being, and about 7 feet deep or 6 feet deep. Dark. Painfully cold in the winter. I've never felt that pain before because of the cold. Unbearably hot in the summer, full of cockroaches, other lice, blood-sucking insects, and it was constant fear of more torture. I mean, hearing footsteps, I was always afraid that, a guard will be coming to pull me up for more torture interrogation. Hearing other people constantly being tortured and hearing their screams was something unbearable. Hearing the sounds of women and children whom I shared the back wall of my cell with. It's just a place which is horrible, unbearable, unthinkable. The things that happens in that torture house, which is known internationally. But even when I was released, that didn't stop the Canadian agencies from trying to get me back in jail. After my release, another report came, and I was called to the same interrogation and torture center I was detained in before, and I was interrogated on a report. At one point, the interrogator told me that the Canadians were not happy that I was released, and they want me back in jail. I received absolutely no assistance from the Canadian embassy. Actually, after my acquittal by one of the most unfair, worldwide known court in Syria, I mean, it's notorious, infamously known of delivering unfair, very rigid, very harsh sentences. But that court even couldn't find anything against me, and they acquitted me of all charges. Now, all the charges that they had and all the arguments they had were all related to Canada, which is very interesting. You know, it had nothing to do with Syria whatsoever. It had things that, you know, what I did in Canada and being questioned by intelligence services in Canada and things like that. So, you know, reading that sentence is as well something very interesting to see that had absolutely nothing to do with Syria. Either way, I was acquitted of all charges, but I was told that I should report to military service. I was, because of, you know, the 22 months of torture I went through, I was in terrible physical and psychological state. I wasn't even able to walk properly. And I was instructed by Mr. Dan McTagg's office, who was responsible for Canadians detained abroad. He is still an MP from Toronto. And I went to the embassy, and after everything that happened, and with all, you know, not getting any assistance from the embassy, positive one, they were involved but negatively in facilitating my interrogation, facilitating meetings and things like that for RCMP and CSIS, but they never helped me. They actually kicked me out of the embassy. When I went to my own embassy to stay there till things get settled and settled down with the Syrians and matters resolved, I was kicked out of the embassy. I was told at 4:30 we close and you have to be out. So this is, in a very short summary, what some of the things we know of the Canadian complicity. We know more than this. The website abdullahalmalki.com has more documents related to this.